morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Everyday Business Show. This is Tony Lontis, your host, and today we'll be joined by Dr. Olivia Ong. But before I get on with the show, here's what you need to remember. Wherever you're watching this live, if you look under the show notes, you will find links to everything that we talk about today. And for those of you that are maybe listening, pop on to drolivialeong.com where you'll find all of Dr. Olivia's information. And if you pop on to tonylontis.com, click on the co-host tab, you will also find all the information and links to anything that we talk about today. If you're watching this live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter, thank you so much for joining us for another live show. This one will be wonderful as well. Wherever you're listening and watching us across the planet, thank you for joining us today. If you want to watch the catch-up shows, please jump on to Binge Networks TV USA, Hero Go TV USA, and the Tony TV channel app, available on all Roku, Samsung, and LG smart TVs across the planet. Now, our wonderful guest today, and this is the third in our series of three shows with the gorgeous Dr. Olivia Ong, who is the founder and CEO of Dr. Olivia Lee Ong, the heart-centered doctor. Here's what you need to know about beautiful Olivia before I introduce our guest. As a compassionate leadership and resilience coach, Dr. Olivia tells her story of how she overcame a devastating spinal cord injury when she was a resident in 2008 and had to learn to walk again with two sticks and a limp after four agonizing years. Dr. Olivia's spinal cord injury taught her that a very important lesson, and we've been talking about this over the last two shows and we'll talk about it again today, and that is self-compassion. And if ever there was a time in our history as humanity that we need to practice self-compassion, now is that time. Now, behind this premise of Dr. Olivia's creative business, the heart-centered doctor, she decided that she needed to teach other medical and healthcare practitioners these concepts. Dr. Olivia is an author, and she's just finished writing her first book, The Heart-Centeredness of Medicine. And she wrote the book after seeing countless numbers of her colleagues suffering from burnout and stress due to overwork. She writes in a way that helps doctors find their way back home. As a medical leadership coach and mentor, Dr. Olivia helps busy, high-achieving, heart-centered doctors avoid burnout and exhaustion and to achieve a balanced energy and time flexibility through her Life Transformation for Doctors programs. So she offers one-on-one coaching, workshops, and speaking engagements on burnout, compassion, fatigue, and vicarious trauma in doctors so that they can stay in the game longer. And as a compassionate leader, Dr. Olivia wants to leave a positive legacy for the upcoming generation of young doctors. And Dr. Olivia helps doctors, nurses, and paramedics across the world achieve the balance they need to keep going. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Olivia.
Thanks, Tony, for having me.
It's been a delightful series of shows for me in particular. As a nurse, not only have I seen and experienced what burnout, fatigue, and mental breakdown look and feel like, it's been wonderful to discuss these concepts with Dr. Olivia. We spoke just before the show, and both of us were saying that this year in particular, it feels almost like we're limping into Christmas. And I think that has a lot to do with the worldwide pandemic. Good morning, Dr. Olivia. How's it going for you? I know it's close to Christmas and it's nearly time for a break, but how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well this week. So my son is back from school, like, you know, he's in school holidays now.
Yes.
So I think I'm really enjoying that time, spending time with him. and we're probably going to watch Spider-Man sometime this week. Yeah, because it's out in the cinemas, and I'm sure it's out worldwide, I think.
Yes.
And it's been doing, I mean, the movie's been apparently having had good reviews, so I'm really excited about it.
I know. And see, that's the
Oh,
thing
we are excited about it.
that's the thing about Christmas. It's actually the best excuse on the planet to have a break and practice
Yes.
self-compassion, isn't it? And self-compassion is
Exactly.
about those little things like going to the movie with the kids. Yeah, I was thinking, gosh, it's been a long time since I've been to the cinema. And one of my treats was go to Gold Class, you know, where they bring the food and the
Yes.
drink and you just sit there and watch on a big
Yes.
screen. That's one of my, I haven't done it for years, years, I don't think. Dr. Olivia, back to the pandemic. I want to just quickly
Yes.
talk about the levels of fatigue in the healthcare sector. And this is not just Australia. This is globally. There's an outpouring of fatigue, exhaustion from dealing with a pandemic. And lots of people, there's not a lot of people talking about this. So from your perspective, just tell us what your colleagues are feeling at the moment.
Well, you know, it's far from over, the pandemic. Now we've got Omicron in, looming ahead. So initially, I guess with the pandemic, doctors and nurses and many other frontline healthcare workers were fearful about, I guess, catching COVID, what happens if they catch COVID and spread it to their families. And now that fear has kind of seeped away and it's becoming fatigue. So fatigue, like it's global fatigue. Not just in Australia, doctors and nurses and other
Across the
frontline
world.
healthcare workers around the world. Yeah, and I think the fatigue is just like probably a sense of hopelessness and helplessness I feel
Yes,
in my the
because
people that
there's
I
no
know. Like,
end in
there's
sight.
no end. Exactly, there's no end in sight, and they're just getting despondent again, I think. And not only they're just getting fatigued, and they're having to deal with the usual things like, the increasing, not only increasing workload, but the constant,
Complexity of the
I
workload
guess,
as well, because managing COVID
yeah, and
in
the,
very sick patients is complex. They're in ICU for a reason. They're incredibly ill on multiple levels. And I'm not sure that people realize the impact that has on a doctor or a nurse's psyche. Dealing with complex, you know what to do, you know how to do it, but then no one, having to tell someone how sick their loved one is, then conversely, having to bring them the worst news in the world. So that has an impact on our health workers. And the fact that this that happens in the normal scheme of things, but during a pandemic, it's constant, it's never ending, and it doesn't look like there's a solution. Your colleagues very much, I know, are suffering. Have you got any words of advice for any healthcare practitioners that might be listening that feel exactly that at this moment? So, part of your practice and what you do now is around heart-centeredness and balance. So, this morning I wanted to explore some of those ways which our
Yes.
healthcare practitioners can bring that balance back into their lives.
Yeah, I feel that the piece of advice I really want to give my peers who are on the front line, and there's so many of them right now, is to probably recognize that you are human. Like you're not meant to be operating like a robot in this constant, stressful working environment. Just take a time, some time, just a little bit of time, a couple of seconds to pause that, and you are human. It's okay to take a little bit of a break to rest, and that's okay. It's nothing against you or anything. And I think it's them finding, I think they find it hard to even take a break because it's hard to fight for them. It's hard to give themselves permission. And not only that, because obviously staff members are down in the roster, so they've got to pick up more shifts. And of course, the fatigue just gets worse and worse that way. And I'm sensing a lot of that because, like, if let's say someone on the roster is down with COVID, and of course, other people will have to take on the shifts. It's the same in medical and same as nursing, it's and paramedics as well. It's all the same. So that's probably why they are more tired than ever. And I think they've had enough.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised. We talked about it if
last
we see
week,
doctors, nurses, and
resigning.
Paramedics leave the profession. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we're seeing
find
that
something
a
else.
lot of
yes.
that.
Exactly. And I'm not sure that people understand. If you're talking about ICU, to get to the point where a doctor is working in intensive care, that's a huge amount of years of their life that they've invested in studying and training to be an intensivist in ICU. So when we talk, when Dr. Olivia and I talk about staff leaving, that you can't replace them tomorrow. You just can't. Yeah. The next intensivist is 10 years away. So when one of those experienced staff leaves, there's a gap that's not really filled. And I don't know if people understand that that's the consequence of all of this. And even for nurses, it takes years to get to that point where they're competent and working in intensive care. And they're just not replaceable. It's a finite resource. And if we don't look after them and we don't help them to get through this time, healthcare will be in just a terrible state, won't it, Dr. Olivia?
Yeah, and definitely, you know, like when there's these gaps where the anaesthetist, let's say if the intensivist has left, they have to think about pulling it from other specialties, like anaesthetics comes to mind because they know how to intubate patients.
Yes.
And guess what? The anaesthetist is already fatigued and burnt out, and they've got to take on ICU shifts on top of anaesthetic shifts. And guess what? They're, you know, like it's an add-on effect on the other specialties.
Absolutely. Yeah. It just completely impacts on the whole healthcare system. When you see nurses and doctors struggling at the level with which they're struggling at the moment. So we really need to put our arms, collective arms around them and give them love and support. And for anyone listening who has practice compassion for medical practitioners of any level, because they're weary, they're tired, and they could do with some loving, couldn't they? It's hard out there. And whilst we in healthcare had been effectively practicing and thinking about pandemics, most of my career, we were always told that at some stage humanity will experience a pandemic. Now we've seen we saw glimpses of that with SARS and MERS, but nothing like what we're experiencing at the moment. So I want to digress a little bit because you've got a beautiful story, Dr. Olivia. You were set on a medical career. Everything was falling into place. You were a resident, and then something happened in 2008 that changed the trajectory of your life. Can you tell, refresh the audience and tell us about that story?
Sure, Tony. So on that particular day, in fact, I remember the day, it's 10th of September, 2008. It was an ordinary spring day here in Melbourne. I was a I was a registrar at the time, first year registrar, on my way to work. Or actually, and I think what I remember happening is I remember parking my car and then walking along the hospital car park, like I you do every day going to work, right? Yes. And then out of nowhere, a car at high speed just rammed into me at high, like, And the next thing I knew, I was on the ground and I was lying in a fetal position, awkward position. And but I didn't realize that my back had dislocated because of the impact of the car. And yeah, that impact of the dislocation of my lower back rendered me a paraplegic. So the thing about my injury happening in a hospital, I was whisked away, or transferred rather, to the one of the major trauma hospitals in Melbourne, and I had immediate medical treatment. In fact, I had friends who actually worked in the hospital, which actually was a blessing in disguise.
Definitely.
So they got they helped me coordinate. Yeah, they helped me coordinate my care, and I was so grateful to have all these friends, and we're still obviously friends up to this day. We talk about what happened there. And on that same night, I had emergency spinal surgery because my spine was not stable at all. Basically, my L1, L2 vertebrae has just dislocated. So the back has snapped in almost in half. I know it sounds gory. And there are some bone fragments from L2 that smashed totally. And
they're
the bone
floating around in the mix, aren't they? Like doing whatever they're getting in the way.
Yeah, and exactly. And then floating into the spinal canal where the spinal cord sits. And yeah, my spinal cord was damaged. And then, you know, after the spinal surgery, that was just the beginning of a long, long haul, a very long haul, in fact. The recovery from the surgery was a blur because I was under, you know, like sedation
So you remember parking the car and walking. You don't you don't remember the actual impact at all?
No, it happened so quickly, but I was definitely awake throughout. Yes. Only when the impact happened, obviously, you know, it happened so quickly. Yes. And the next thing I knew, I looked, because that's the first thing I did. I opened my eyes and just analyzed whether I had a head injury, because I knew I just had to be a doctor for a little while and going, I didn't have a head injury. I wasn't quadriplegic. I could move my arms.
Yes.
And then I couldn't move my legs. And I go, oh gosh, is it a pelvic fracture? Is it a spinal cord injury or what, you know, leg injuries? You know, those are the things that pop up in my mind. But so after the spinal surgery, you know, a few weeks of medically not quite stable, like, you know, my health, it was a bit hit, like a bit precarious.
It's very serious for anyone listening. They're very serious, complex injuries because there's multiple body systems that are involved, and then it's very life and death for quite a while with spinal injuries of that magnitude.
Yeah, exactly. It was literally life and death. I couldn't eat. Yes. So they had to put a nasogastric tube, well, a tube up my nose.
Oh, they're horrible things.
That's not pleasant, that one. And I have to admit. And I could only drink orange juice. For some reason, I could only drink orange juice. I'm not sure why. And I had problems with my bladder.
Yes.
And had to put a catheter in. So I was like tubes everywhere and drips everywhere. I was very unwell for a couple of weeks.
Which gives you a whole nother perspective on what it's like to be a patient. So they got you through that initial horrible bit, and then you eventually started on rehab, and your rehab in particular ended up taking you across the world to San Diego. And time I talk to you about this story, all I can think of is how horrible that long flight from Australia must have been. I just to do the flight would have been almost enough to turn you off leaving and going to San Diego. But you had an opportunity to participate in an amazing program, and it changed things for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. So, you know, on the plane ride, I think my excitement and nervousness superseded the, you know,
thank
discomfort
goodness
for being
that
on the plane. Yeah, I think I just visualized what it would be like to be in the actual program, doing what I needed to do to learn to walk again. I think that kind of kept me going for the whole flight, even though it was a very long flight. It's 14-hour flight to Los Angeles, which is where I had to go first, then take another plane ride to San Diego. That's right, but we figured out in the end that it was better just to drive from LA to San Diego. So we just after a trip or two, we just decided to just
drive,
land in LA and then drive down to San Diego, which is a beautiful drive.
I was just like, gorgeous drive.
Yeah, Highway 5, I think. I can't remember. Yes. I think that's Pacific Highway 5. That's the one.
It's
that
a
goes
good drive.
On the whole. Yes. He has a good drive.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I remember that very well. And yeah, so I was in Project Walk for 3 years, and that was the best 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
I felt a bit like scared because I didn't know anyone there, but I think people were just like so warm and friendly. The trainers were really approachable and really helped me out, because there'll be days where I will dip into a low, of course.
Absolutely.
Anyone with a spinal cord injury will probably with any serious injury can probably relate to that. There'll be days where you go like, am I gonna ever get out of this, whatever this is?
Yeah.
And there'll be days where you're on very happy, on a high. And the trainers were there for me every step of the way. And the friends I made, who also they also have spinal cord injuries. Mm-hmm. And they're going through a very similar journey. And I think this is where self-compassion, when I reflect back, I realize this
that's
is all self-compassion.
Started.
Yeah, and that's when it really, really helped to heal me from the inside out. I was starting to be kind to myself. I was, you know, like initially before I came to Project Wong, I was really hard on myself because I had to adjust to a life being in a wheelchair, people giving me looks, kids coming up to me and, you know, trying to like say, what's wrong with your leg? You know, people coming up. I even have like not just kids, strangers coming up. Are you all right? Do you need some help? Or how's your leg? You know, like they'll be, I know they're just like curious, but obviously me at that time.
It's hard to deal with.
Yeah, I found it quite, it's really hard to deal with. Like that kind of vulnerability, which I see as weakness at that time. And that shame I had, the guilt and all, like, why did I land myself in this position? It was my fault. Yeah. I should have not been in the car park at that time. Those things do ruminate through my mind time and time again. And then, as I said, I felt quite lonely when I first started in Project Walk. But that changed, obviously, when I made lots of friends. And then self-acceptance was the thing that really helped me got over the other line of learning to be kinder to myself, to be more compassionate to myself. And that's where things really changed. Like I started to get more involved in, I guess, doing things outside the physical rehab. Because I was just so focused on the physical intensive rehab. I didn't even want to socialize, but I realized that through the socializing, that's how I actually healed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so the friendships I made, that actually was the healing piece.
Did you have to gain hope again? Because I'm thinking that there was a certain amount of hopelessness in the early stages of your recovery where you just thought, what am I going to do? Like, am I ever going to be a doctor? So was in San Diego, did you start to get some hope back and think, okay, I can do this. I can still be a doctor.
I think it's the atmosphere of Project Walk as such a positive vibration place. Like everyone was, maybe it's, I mean, I find that Americans are generally more optimistic group of people. I don't know, this is stereotyping, but I generally feel them. My American friends are usually the more positive ones. It's probably a fact.
Well, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. I think Americans are very positive and uplifting, and I love working with them. And there's something that we as Australians are not always the most uplifting of populaces, but we're Americans are very positive, very uplifting, and they really celebrate the wins, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So even when we all had little wins, our trainers would celebrate with us.
Aww.
Whether it's like a trip to Starbucks or having dinner together after training.
Yes.
You know, it's stuff like that. So we celebrate every single win. So now that I'm a coach myself, I realized that I also celebrate little wins and big wins with my clients. And it made me think about my time in Project Walk, where my trainers, you know, like they celebrate every single win. And even when I have bad days, they were there with me too to talk about it and debrief with them. So I think it's that, the environment where I was in, such a positive environment, helped me. So I can emphasize really, how important environment is.
I was just going to say, and I've had coaches and mentors the whole, my whole business journey. And it took me a while to be vulnerable enough to accept coaching and mentorship, number one, but it has definitely made a huge amount of difference. And so I know that what Dr. Olivia does is incredibly important, because once you have that external set of eyes, rather than listening to the negativity that permeates through your mind, once you have a coach or a mentor that can go, hey, now wait, that's not actually true. You are not the horrible person that you think you are. You are not hopeless. And there's something about that process of a coach or a mentor putting external words into your brain that really helps you take yourself forward and achieve greater things. There's a reason why phenomenal sports people all have coaches. because they want to get somewhere. They want to achieve something. They want to create something. Should be no different for the rest of us. And I'm really glad that Dr. Olivia had this experience so that she learnt these amazing things and now teaches doctors and nurses and paramedics and people in the healthcare sector what this stuff looks like, how to be your best self, how to get rid of that imposter syndrome. Because doctors, they're no different from other human beings. They still feel that they're imposters, don't they, Olivia?
Totally. It's the environment where we work in. We are constantly made to feel inferior to the other people. And that's why imposter syndrome is so prevalent, I guess, in the medical community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I want to encourage people who are listening to this, the imposter syndrome, just see it as a good thing. And we talked about it in our last show. It's a sign that when you have imposter syndrome, it means that you actually care enough about what you do and your message. Yes. And all the work that you do. And it's a sign of growth. It's a sign of expansion. So when you feel that imposter voice creeping in, just be mindful that it's actually growth on your part. It's actually a good thing. So when you reframe it like that, it's actually really, really helpful. I found that really helpful when I started reframing that way, rather than getting quite, you know, feeling, having this inferior complex going, or that doctor has got everything like going on really well, like head of the department, you know, like has
but what's
like three
going on
beautiful kids
behind exactly. the scenes. What's going on? What are they struggling with that? You know, and it could be anything, couldn't it, Olivia? It could be an argument with their family or a fallout with their siblings. Like, it could be anything that goes, you're a bad human. You're not a good person. Mm. Those voices in your head that everyone has, and once you start to recognize that that's what you're saying in your mind, you can, once you know about it, you're conscious, aren't you? You can't be unconscious of it going forward. And sometimes the best time to tackle those voices and those conversations in your head is with a coach in a safe environment that allows you to explore what sits behind some of those voices and some of those conversations, because they can relate back to childhood. They can relate back to a traumatic memory. And in Dr. Olivia's case, lots of them are going to relate back to that accident about why was I there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, exactly. And once you have someone to help you navigate through that, you start to move forward. Dr. Olivia, was all of that work around mindset helpful in your recovery? Did it correlate with your recovery when you started to recognize what was going on in your mind? Did that correlate with the recovery as well?
Yeah, exactly. So when I shifted my mindset, it wasn't like a
light
quick
bulb
thing that happened. Light bulb. Yeah, it actually happened like in small bits every day. So the train, like there'll be a milestone I achieve, and then the trainers will celebrate with me, or there'll be some tasks that are really hard, and I'll be like, I don't know whether I can do this, and my trainer will be encouraging me. So I think, you know, like these trainers, even though they're not coaches per se, but they've got a really positive mindset, a growth mindset. They encourage me to, let's just keep going, be open to learning new things. And I guess that was my first exposure to some kind of coaching, perhaps. But it was coaching myself through my recovery to learn to walk again. So that journey itself was probably a lot of self-coaching on my part, because every day I had to deal with all the negative stories and beliefs, like what if I'm stuck the way I am, I can't move, it's too hard, it's so painful, and you know, lots of those kind of limiting beliefs do pop up a lot when you're doing such a, you know, intensive rehab for such long periods of time. It's like 5 hours each day, Monday to Friday for 3 years. It's a lot. It's probably it's probably like an Olympic athlete. They have to do something similar, and I'm like, geez, I'm not even an Olympic athlete. I'm like, you know, I'm a medical professional. Like, I'm not even, you know, I'm not like physically fit as well. That was before the injury. But obviously, the funny thing is the intensive rehab made me fitter, much more healthier than like able-bodied people. So I was like, Because I was able to, like I got so fit that in San Diego I was able to do kayaking in Mission Bay in San Diego. The San Diegans will know where it is. Mission Bay. I actually climb a mountain with my trainers, like trek up a mountain, up and down, like, and
Wow.
that was with my semi-paralyzed right leg. With the, of course, the help of my trainers, especially up going uphill and downhill can be a bit tricky. So I was able to do all that. So I have to say, like mindset shifting, mindset coaching in an indirect way through exercise,
Correlates,
yeah, it really correlates totally with recovery as well.
When you were talking last week about the exoskeleton, because that was the first kind of part of that helped you like get upright, wasn't it?
Because my core muscles were not strong enough when I first came with Project
Yes.
Walk. So and I was my balance was not great. So the exoskeleton was really helpful. They got a machine which is similar to the ones they have in Netherlands, maybe is it Netherlands, Germany. It's called LocoMat, but this time the LocoMat, it's like a robotic system where the machine actually moves the legs and then you just feel as if you're walking.
So the machine does the work for you. That must have been an amazing experience. Like the first time that happened for you, you're like, oh wow, this
Exactly,
is,
yeah. So it was good. But the machine that Project Walk has is not the one that I was exposed, that I had from. There was a facility in Melbourne that had that particular exoskeleton, but it was getting quite costly to attend weekly. So the owner of that practice actually got the local map from, yeah, it's overseas, Germany or something. But the ones that that I had in Project Walk was half supporting my weight, but the trainer still need to move my leg. So you can imagine the trainers had to sit down and physically move my leg, and they had to do that for like 20 minutes. So you can imagine the kind of bonding I had with my trainers. We were very we worked really closely together, and they were like, I could tell, like, because I'm as a rehab physician, I knew them when they were doing stuff like that, it will make their neck hurt and their backs and their arms. And then my trainers will obviously tell me about, oh, you know, I've got like wrist pain. I'd be like, why am I not surprised? Like, you know, but because I'm a doctor, so that's why they're happy, they're willing to share and be vulnerable about their ailments, I guess, as trainers. But you know, we're so open with each other, and I was like, yeah, because you've been doing repetitive work, that's what you've been doing, like helping us clients move our legs. So we're very grateful. So we usually throw a party like every year for the trainers. Yeah, Americans throw very good parties. So the Australians trying to match it. We try to match it, but it's not the same. No.
Dr. Livy, in terms of the advances in technology relating to spinal cord injury, there's some amazing stuff happening out there with AI and robotics and the interactions between, the human body and the attachment of for amputees, the attachment of robotic arms and stuff. It is conceivable in our lifetime that if you have a spinal cord injury, that you will actually be able to walk again, isn't it?
Because I think we cannot underestimate the power of visualization. That's a different part of the brain. That's the visual, I think it's the visual and cortex where you imagine yourself walking, or imagine yourself, or let's say for amputees, imagine yourself moving your arm. And that's activated through the brain. And that's starting to show there's all this AI that's happening. So I won't be surprised if it's it starts to you know, have lots of equipment. And I remember this watching this movie called, what's it called, Avatar in 2009. I
Definitely.
think I remember the lead character
Oh
was a
gosh, that
paraplegic.
would, yes, that, yes,
Yeah,
that would
and
have
that
been.
reminded me of that movie, and then how in the virtual reality world he's got like he's a like a normal
Walking.
per well not normal he was an avatar, I guess, of some sort, and walking. So it can be achievable. Like, I'm sure people have gone, oh, you know, like with the initial iPhone, they go, is this for real? And then now with the
That's right.
iPhone 13, right?
What did we
So
do without an iPhone? Like,
exactly. So we have to really be open-minded to all
Dr.
these
Olivia,
technologies.
in thinking about like Avatar, where he's a quadriplegic or a paraplegic, anyway, and he's and he's he goes from that to being able to walk freely and do amazing things. I'm wondering about that link and that visualization link between what he's actually experiencing in virtual reality and how that would impact on his mind, because it's just a big visualization technique on steroids, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And then there's that sense of this, I think there's a lot of to healing that's more than just physical healing. There's also emotional, mental and spiritual healing. And I think we're starting to realize that there's more to Western medicine now. There is, you know, there is holistic medicine. We're talking about energy-based healing practices.
Energy-based,
like we have the Heart-Mind Institute. We got HeartMath. You know, like we've got so many doctors who are kind of like doing holistic things to help their patients heal. So I've met so many mindfulness, self-compassion teachers who practice that. Yes. I mean, one clear example, I mean, Deepak Chopra, he's an MD.
Yes.
There's many other, I mean, John Kabat-Zinn is also an MD, right? Like these are doctors, but they've gone into mindfulness.
Other areas
of healing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's what will be exciting for healthcare in the future is all of these things, the interaction between the mind, the ability of the body to heal itself if we allow it to. All of those things will start to come further into generalized healthcare, which is pretty darn exciting, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. I'm really excited about this because there's a lot more to, just the physicality of medicine. There's all this other wonderful modalities that involve, and I'm really excited. I know that in America they're more or less integrated. For some, like Western and Eastern,
yes,
but Australia is still quite there's a dichotomy still, so we still need to work hard on it.
We're a little bit back,
we're a bit behind.
So all of this actually leads to your life work, which is happening right now, and that is around the programs that you have for healthcare practitioners, from nurses to doctors to whoever, and how your knowledge and understanding has led to this amazing, the amazing programs that you have for healthcare professionals to live their best life. So imagine if just because of your journey and what you've been through that's caused you to be right on heart-centeredness and publish a book on heart-centeredness of medicine and create these amazing programs for coaching. What if that led to helping a doctor who made a huge discovery in cancer? Because if you're living your best life and if you're balanced and practicing vulnerability, self-compassion, and that whole living your best life, that allows you and your brain to achieve amazing things, doesn't it?
Exactly, exactly. You're right. And then there's always that part of the, you know, like there's more to the mind that meets the eye. That's also the subconscious mind that we kind of ignore, but that's where our
powerful
emotions
place.
Arise, a very powerful place. And that's where imagination, visualization arise from as well, to look into the future, to hope for a better future. It all comes from that.
And to dream and create and innovate. That's where all that amazing stuff comes from. So the more of our healthcare practitioners that operate from that space, then we can achieve amazing things within healthcare. One of your programs, Dr. Olivia, is called the Life Transformation Program. And I love this one just simply because I love the CIA formula. Can you tell the audience about the Life Transformation Program that you run and what is the CIA formula?
Yeah, the Life Transformation Program for doctors, essentially it's a 12-week life coaching program that I have for you know, clients who are doctors and other healthcare professionals. Purely when they come to me, they feel a lot of inner chaos. There's a lot of overwhelm and stress for obvious reasons. A lot of them work in the front line, either in the front line or some of them are running medical practices. And they're business owners, so their burnout is quite different. So the clients that I have got burnout from different situations. As we know, in the last 18 months, a lot of business, small business owners have been badly affected by the pandemic. And that includes clinic owners like doctors and surgeons. And, you know, I mean, surgeons are doctors, but you know what I mean? And yeah, their business have also been badly affected. Even in Melbourne, we had 4 months where I think surgeons couldn't even operate. So you can imagine they have to pay the bills, pay the mortgage. Kids still have to go to school, well, homeschool in that regard. And then that put on a tremendous strain and toll on them. And and that's the burnout rate obviously has gone up because of all these financial things. So most of my clients come from that setting, like people who are small business owners who are specialists and they're burnt out, or they are doctors in training in hospitals and they're burnt out because of the roster has been crazy. Overwork. Yeah. So different kinds of overwork, but outcome is still severe burnout. So they all come to me. But I have to say that if they are at the point of quite severe burnout where they start to develop depression, anxiety, that's where I actually tell them not to be coached by me and see their GP or primary care physician or GP. Yeah. And then see that or see a psychologist, sometimes even a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
If things get really not well controlled. And then once they're, you know, they feel that they're, that side of things, mental health side of things is well controlled, then they can come and be coached. So that's, I have very strict criteria about it, because you can't be coached in the best way if you are, you've got depression, you know, like depression and things.
Just thinking about that combination of being a doctor and having that healthcare perspective and being coached by you, it actually gives a really holistic, because as a doctor, you're going to know straight away, this person has some severe depression. That needs to be sorted first, then come back and do this, this, and this. I know from my own experience that I had to get that breakdown depression sorted, and then I started on a whole self-discovery learning process that has taken me on a journey where I never knew what was possible. And that's the thing about human capacity for change, innovation, and creativity. You don't know where you can go if you don't start somewhere. And for any health professionals listening to Dr. Olivia today, you don't know what you can create when you have the right person to help you do that. And it's about accepting that a third person or someone outside of you will see things in a different way. They'll be able to pinpoint unreal expectations. They'll be able to pinpoint blocks and things that are holding you back in a way that you will not notice, that because you don't know. You need an external person to help you work out what's going on, and then bang, here's what you need to do. Do this, this, and this. I'll walk with you. I'll support you. And bang, off you go. It's coaches, I think, are something that we will see really come into the forefront of everyone's minds in the next decade, because it really amps up human capacity and capability. And if there's ever a place where that needs to happen, it's healthcare, isn't it, Olivia?
Yeah, totally, Tony. What I'm my initiative right now is to actually introduce peer coaching in hospitals, because I find that a lot of times when doctors are in distress, they have a hotline to call, and sometimes that hotline doesn't even work. So I'm like, where do they turn? Who do they turn to? They can't keep debriefing with fellow colleagues who are also equally burnt out. So that, I mean, a lot of hospitals in the US have actually introduced peer coaching programs, and they've been really successful. Yeah, so the Americans, again, is ahead of us. But, you know, like, but they've done really well. It's actually good to be ahead, so I know who the gold standard people are. And then to approach them directly and say, hey, how did you get all these programs up and running? I know that there's a few doctors in Mount Sinai in New York City where they've got lots of well-being resilience programs up and running for doctors, not just doctors, I think all the guys professionals in distress.
Yeah, the guys in New York had it tough. Like when COVID hit, copped it, like just horrible times. So that's good to hear that they have those programs up and running. And absolutely, that peer help and support is And we never used to see that, did we, Olivia? There was nobody talked about support for young residents coming into the hospital and healthcare setting. And it's a huge thing, isn't it? It's a hugely different environment from university. And there's so many moving parts and things to coordinate and to get used to. And if you have a cranky consultant and a bad roster, it's a horrible time to transfer for them.
Recipe for disaster, isn't it?
It's a total recipe for disaster. And I think about it now and I wonder, how did those residents cope? Like, how did they get through? Terribly difficult. So if we set things up so that they are geared for success versus burnout, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just setting up, these doctors for success, a preventative measures for burnout. That's, I think we need to kind of reframe burnout not as a problem to be fixed and then just thrown away in a corner.
Yes.
It's more of a dilemma because it's something that we have to battle with. We have to be mindful that it will pop up a lot. Mm. And we do need to have a strategy plan for it to prevent it. So we need to adopt two or three habits. And mine, which is actually the CIA formula, comes from my habits. My own personal habits, which I actually have now encompassed it in a coaching framework. Mm-hmm. So C will be compassion, which is what we've been talking about, self-compassion. And that has a lot of actual practical habits that one can do, even like putting a hand over the heart. It's so simple this. When you're stressed, you've got all these
patients coming in, and
then you've got crazy working
environment. It's a really simple thing, but that hand on the heart and two deep breaths and it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Just simple things like that. And the I with intuition is to always tap into your intuition when you're doing things rather than trying to stay in the head or analytical mind all the time. And more often than not, the intuition is always right. And it's probably a very freeing feeling because your intuition helps you to be creative and find solutions outside the box or things like that.
Olivia,
so never forget about our intuition.
in the university setting where doctors start all their training, do they ever talk about intuition?
No.
They never used to.
I don't think so. I don't think they still talk. They haven't talked about it yet, but they're starting to be very mindfulness has found its way in the curriculum of universities, medical schools. So we're starting to see a trend. Then maybe self-compassion can sneak in a good
way. And then intuition.
Intuition probably will follow suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important. Yeah.
Because sometimes you've got a patient that presents with XYZ, and you're thinking, oh, I think it's PQRS. And that's intuition going, don't go that way, go this way. And if all of our doctors were going, intuition says this, maybe I should do blah, 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 blah. Better healthcare for everyone. Much more fulfilling for doctors as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I mean, that's probably why quite a number of doctors actually pursue their creative interests outside medicine. Like for myself, I'm an author. I've met many doctors who have become authors as well. Or they become actors. Like Ken Jeong is a clear example. He's an MD and he's now an actor in Hollywood. There's many others as well who end up as speakers or coaches. There's so many physician coaches around the world because saw themselves as pursuing something creative outside where they are in medicine. And a lot of them have actually managed to complement both well, because it's terms of your I am the brand, or I am the brand, right?
Yes.
And I am me, so I'm my identity, and I'm really happy with it. So I think I'm starting to see a lot more doctors embracing their intuition and creativity and pursuing their interests outside medicine, which I'm really happy to see.
And the final part, the A, what does that stand for?
That stands for attitude. And that was actually a game changer for me when I had, when I was getting coached and then received coaching, my mindset shifted. So I realized that coaching is so powerful because it can literally expand your mind, like
absolutely,
in a really good way. Yeah, and get you to see things from a 360 perspective rather than 180. Mm. I think that's a good summation of coaching, which is helps you see
the
360,
bigger picture.
Not 180. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, big picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's and then attitude will mean like having a being open-minded, and that's a lot of things they've been talking about in mindfulness, like beginner's mind. That's actually attitude. That's actually good attitude.
Yeah.
So even though you don't always try to aim to be an expert in everything, which unfortunately happens a lot in medicine, everyone tries to be an expert in everything.
Yeah.
But I think having a beginner's mind and learning new skills, learning new things, even meeting your patients, have a beginner's mind too, and not have preconceived ideas about the patient. And that's for people working in healthcare. I mean, that kind of mindset shift has helped shape the way I practice medicine, has
definitely
made me enjoy medicine a lot more rather than finding it, burdensome. I found it more enjoyable now because I can have really meaningful conversations with my patients. And as a coach, I have meaningful conversations and coaching sessions with my clients. So
yeah,
it works really well.
Like, it's just wonderful. I mean, of all the horrible things to happen to you in your life, the outcome is this amazing heart-centered practice and coaching practice that I only see will grow as we talk about it more across healthcare. Dr. Olivia, we are out of time yet again. It has been a real privilege to share this time with you. For everyone listening, please jump on connect with Dr. Olivia Leong.com or Dr. Olivia Ong on all socials. Wherever you see this interview, you will find information on how to connect with Dr. Olivia. If you're a doctor listening, you have to grab a copy of The Heart-Centeredness of Medicine by Dr. Olivia Ong. I look forward to chatting to you again next year. But Dr. Olivia, thank you so much for sharing your time with me. I appreciate that you are busy, wonderful, amazing practitioner, and it's been a pleasure to chat to you on this show series. And that, my friends, is your lot for this week, and we will be back after Christmas with some more.